today's marketing is so fundamentally different than what yesterday's marketing used to be, that you have to understand the power of a brand message, the power of storytelling, to then usher that big idea through and to sort of cut through the noise. And like, how does that big idea land and resonate across all these different touch points that the consumer, community, individual, human, whomever, that they have, like whatever's taking their attention? And if you don't have them all threaded together, like a strong story, like what we would do at Weber Shandwick, it doesn't break through. And then it just becomes a bunch of, you're just doing a bunch of stuff because there's a lot of stuff to do. And now I'm not saying don't try it, like definitely try the new things, but when you try it, make sure your brand comes through and resonates. Make sure your big idea, whatever that idea may be, like how does it manifest on this platform or this idea or this thing? And that's the secret to really strong marketing programs.
Explore the minds and marketing strategies behind today's winning brands and businesses. Tap into the power of the creator economy with Earned by Creator IQ. Here's Connor Begley.
Welcome to Earned, everybody. Today, we're going to learn from the CMO of one of the hottest brands that we have ever tracked, Katie Welch. Welcome to the show, Katie.
Hi, Connor. Thank you so much for having me. I'm grateful to be here.
Of course. And I can tell you that I am more grateful that you are here than I am here, because I'm always here. But your background is just so stellar. I think for those that don't know you, right, you were the EVP of Global Brands at Weber Shandwick, and you also had almost 10 years of kind of senior agency experience. And Weber Shandwick's not a fly-by-night operation, right? It's a 4,000-person agency. Then you helped build and sell Hourglass Cosmetics as a CMO to Unilever Prestige. You then helped launch Honest Beauty, and then founding CMO of Rare Beauty. You don't know this stat, but it is the most successful launch of any beauty brand we've tracked since 2019. So that's pretty good. I didn't go back further, but other than maybe Fenty Beauty, the most successful we've probably ever tracked. And then you also have a TikTok where you are mentoring people and have 16,000 fans. So you're an influencer now too, which is great. Just so glad to have you on. I want to know about your TikTok. I poked through, I watched a bunch of videos. One, who inspired it? Was it all you, or was there somebody that pushed you? And then what have you learned as part of that process? Because I think, you know, it's got to be really cool to like see the other side of it because you interact with so many creators. Tell me about it.
I love TikTok so much. I am obsessed. And so I'm part of the Learn on TikTok creators group. There's a side of TikTok that's all about education and learning. And so they've tapped a handful of people to help continue to create that content. And I can't believe it, but I'm one of their creators. Obviously, when TikTok first launched after Musical.ly, I guess that was 2019, when it really started to get traction, I was just on there trying to create content with my dog. I was not about to do the renegade dance at all, nor will I ever try and do that. But I really just loved it. And I think as a marketer, I always try to pay attention to what's capturing people's attention. And my goodness, does TikTok capture people's attention. And I was just fascinated by it. I was fascinated by, of course, the app and the algorithm and how it works, but then also the content that was being put out there, because those who are creating TikToks, they're really creative. And I love creative people, you know, expressions of creativity. So it's the way people were editing things, the things that they were talking about, the fact that it served up someone different every time I opened up my For You page. I just thought it was fascinating. But I never said, oh, you know, I want to get on TikTok. But I also know that also as a marketer, you have to use the platforms to truly understand them. So yeah, I did that back in 2007 with Twitter, you know, and so then here we are now with TikTok. And I thought, oh gosh, how am I going to do this? And then I started to think about, we were hiring for Rare Beauty, we were building the team. And I started to think about, how did I get into beauty? How did I learn about it? How did I start out? I would love to say that it was just a few years ago, but it was in the 90s. And it was because I met one person who I saw her career path. And she was an executive at Estee Lauder. And I was 19. And when I saw her career path, I thought, you can do that? I mean, I grew up in Missouri. I didn't grow up in the tri-state area or LA. Like, I didn't know these headquarters. And when I saw that, I thought, oh my gosh, that's what I want to do. That I love makeup. I love beauty. I didn't know that I could do something with it. That idea, that light bulb went off in my head. And I was like, I want to be able to pay it forward. So I thought, gosh, what can I do to do what that woman did for me? And then at the same time, as then I go and open up TikTok and I'm looking at the renegade dances, and I thought, oh, wait a second. I wonder if I could do something to then scale this idea of talking about the beauty industry and sort of pulling back the curtain a little bit and saying, because as I was just not even at Rare Beauty, but my whole career, you know, the way people get into beauty, so often it's through connections, It's kind of a guarded industry, or it's so competitive, and that's not fair. It shouldn't be that way. So when I met Robin and I saw that path, I was like, you know what? I'm going to try and use TikTok to break down all of the different types of career paths so that people can understand that they don't have to be a makeup artist. Like, yes, of course, you could be great at makeup artistry or creative or marketing, but there's also operations, regulatory, HR, finance, planning and allocation, e-commerce, digital, product development, package design. Like, there's so many different career paths that you could easily sort of find a job and find your way into the beauty industry. You don't have to know someone. You don't have to be a makeup artist. So I was just trying to break down all of those barriers potentially.
Yeah.
To talk about, okay, these, you want to get into it. These are the different career paths. These are the places where you can find a job, or talk about marketing and then really sort of be more of a marketing mentor. Like, okay, so you want to launch a product? This is what's involved. And so I just did a handful, and then it just started to get traction. I was getting these really awesome questions. I'm really fascinated by people. I'm fascinated by their passions, their endeavors, their potential. And so I started to get these amazing questions, and I wanted to help them. And like, they had legit questions like, okay, well, I work at Sephora and I want to get into a brand's education team, or I work at Ulta and I don't understand about who is this person that comes in to Ulta? Or will you help me look at my resume? And I thought, oh gosh, how am I going to do this? And because you put yourself out there, I didn't want to not respond. So then I said, do you guys want to meet like one-on-one? Should I do one-on-one mentor sessions? And I honestly, Connor, I didn't think. I was like, you know, 10 people. Great. 10 people. That video went viral. And as every marketer knows, you cannot predict a viral video. You cannot set out to create a viral video.
That was my next question. What's the difference between, because I would look and most of them are here, and then every once in a while they're like 10x or 20x.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like,
oh, okay. Yeah. So we'll get into that. Because the other thing, the other benefit of doing this is then I've learned a lot about the algorithm and how it works. And then so when I talk to the team to say, wait a minute, should we try this? Should we try that? At least they know, okay, well, Katie has a sense of how it works, kind of.
Yeah,
Not that it's formulaic, and not that TikTok is it's so different. So I posted a type form, and I thought, you know, I'm going to put a ton of questions that they have to fill out. And because if you're really interested, then you'll go through all the questions. And if you're, it'll weed out those who aren't interested. And I was worried that people would just think it's an opportunity to maybe meet Selena Gomez. And but lo and behold, next thing you know, I had 100 responses.
Oh, wow.
And it cut off at 100 because I just used the free type form. And thank goodness it would have kept going because I thought I can't take. The responses were great. And there are individuals who are early in their career, in college. There was one person in high school that they just wanted help for many different reasons, whether it was, I don't have anyone to ask and I just have a few questions, or a lot of questions like, well, I want to be you. How do I be you? And I'm like, okay, whoa, hold up. Like, take that stress off of your shoulders. Let's walk through. Like, it's not a linear path. Like,
we'll
get there. Let's talk
Everybody's
through
gonna
your
be different.
Career, your early career. Yes, exactly. So I've mentored almost 100 people so far off the app, which has been great because it was something that was, I would do it every morning from like 8 to 8:30.
Yeah.
And wake up like, oh boy, I'm tired. Why? But then when I hang up, oh boy.
Because you have to be like, you're supposed to be inspiring, right? Like you're supposed to, you know, and that's hard, right?
Right. Like, well, you know, we're still working full time. And but then at 8:30 when it was done, I was always inspired. I swear every single person with whom I spoke, I loved them. Like I loved what they had to say. I learned from them. It was just awesome. And to be able to help someone and watch the stress, not totally melt, but like, I remember there was this one woman, Astu, and she said to me, Katie, I've only worked at Sephora. And I'm like, wait, hold on. You have worked in beauty. You can't say that. What do you mean? Because she worked retail, but she really wanted to work in the brand. So we talked through her resume and how she taught. And I said, let's talk about who you've met, what you've learned, what you understand about operations, education, brand marketing, product
super
marketing.
Super valuable information.
Totally. And she just needed to talk it through with someone. And like everything, it's all about the narrative you tell yourself. And once she saw that and heard that, she was like, oh, okay. All right. I feel a lot better. I go, see, you're on the right path. And like anything, we all need that person to help us see things in a new light.
Being able to provide that perspective for people has to be super impactful.
Yeah. Everyone needs someone to talk through things with. It has been really rewarding, personally rewarding, truly. So I started doing those. And then the TikTok started taking off because the individuals, when I'd meet with them, they'd say, well, I watched all your TikTok videos before we talked. And I was like, oh, God, you did? You really did. You're really paying attention to these things. And they were. And so now I really try and put thought into them, which makes it even a little bit more time consuming or hard because I second guess myself because I'm still human. The best part is that 3 people have found jobs. since that all people that I've spoken with. Yeah. So it's just, they're just a great group. So I love TikTok. I love going on live and just answering questions. And then the added benefit is now for Rare Beauty, I understand the platform.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. The giving advice is tough. Like, I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs as well. And like, you know, I've had some experiences and we've done all right. But giving them guidance, like I think this is right, but like, I don't want to steer you in the wrong direction. Like,
I always say, like, yeah, the question I get a lot, should I get my MBA? And I don't have my MBA. But I always bring back to it is a personal decision. So at the end of the day, you're never telling anyone what to do. It's really just helping them think through the options and weighing all the possibilities. The thing that everyone likes to hear are sort of all the different paths within beauty and kind of helping them understand, you know, everyone, they all want to find their passion. I just want to do what I'm passionate about. I'm like, well, do you know that yet? No. Well, which is true. I mean, you think about I say, I didn't actually say out loud, I would like to be the CMO of a beauty brand until 2014.
Okay.
Or so. But I was at Weber Shandwick and I was like, you know what, that's actually what I want to do. And I had been working for 15 years at that point. So when they hear that, they're like, oh, so you didn't know right away? Like, you didn't know the second you graduated college? And it's like, no, I think there's just more pressures now. There's like LinkedIn pressure from these college kids. Anyway,
well, because you can go and see everybody else's LinkedIn, right? And of course, LinkedIn, just like Instagram, is very manicured. It's going to look just like everything is in a perfect order, linear progression. And you can look at everybody and be like, ooh, well, I'm not there. There's a lot of pressure there.
And well, that was about something we didn't have anyway.
Yeah. So let's talk about your background though. Actually, to go to that, there's two things, right? So one, totally, there wasn't that pressure back then. At the same time though, you also, just like that, like accessibility, visibility, you get to see like, oh, like I can look at so many different people and see so many different paths that were obscure in the past, right? Mm-hmm. In the past, they would just see, oh, you're the CMO, and they'd have no idea what your path was to getting there. And they can say, oh, wow, you know, she spent some time at an agency and then she was at this brand and then she did this thing. And like, I think there's a lot of benefit there too. You know what I mean?
Well, and it's so different than other beauty CMOs or other consumer brand CMOs for sure. The key is when you're younger is to figure out what you're good at because that becomes what you like. And like you think, like I love beauty products, but I'm not a product developer, you know? And so I could have said like, but my passion is makeup. But what I'm good at is taking what's been developed, seeing the potential and bringing it to life, amplifying it, seeing the big idea, storytelling. You don't know that when you're graduating college, you know? So I think so many people say like, oh, I want to do what I'm passionate about. You can do sort of passion adjacent, you know? It's like, I'm passionate about beauty, but I don't think I would be a good product developer.
My wife always gives me a hard time. She's like, you just don't want to play this game because you're not good at it. And I was like, yeah, of course. It's way more fun to play games you're good at than games you're not good at.
Well, in your career, you're going to ultimately like a career where you're going to gravitate what you're successful at. It's like, if you're a great tax accountant, you may not be passionate about taxes, but if you're good at it, then you're going to like it, I would assume. Yeah. And so that's something I think telling a lot of the mentees, like, you need to get the experience so that you can start to figure out what you're good at, what you gravitate towards. And that's why it's okay to sort of, you want to experience all the different things. Or when you start out, the other thing is like starting out, we start at the ground level, walking them through like, okay, yes, you may be doing something that seems like it's not important, but then walking them through sort of the orchestra that is marketing, the part that they play and how important it is, then it becomes much more meaningful.
Of course. And I think people tend to forget just kind of how long their careers are. And the phrase I've always liked, I've said it before, people tend to overestimate what they can do in a year and underestimate what they can do in a decade. And like thinking in decades is just a really powerful concept. Like, what do I want to accomplish over the next 10 years, right? And then realizing that like, okay, like I'm 10 years in, I've got another 3 decades. Like, whoa, I've done a lot in 10 years. Like I could do that again and again and again, right?
So
I've always really liked that phrase. I think it's a Bill Gates quote.
That's smart. And it makes so much sense. And I would never have realized it until now. Like looking back at, okay, what happened in my 20s? What happened in my 30s?
And if you're going to like beginning to end, what was the change? Mm-hmm. It's like, whoa, that's a lot of change, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's a lot of growth. Well, let's talk about your career a little bit more. And then I really want to hop in deep into Rare because I think it's just such a, it's just gone so well. As well as, frankly, I mean, you did so many cool things. But I'd love to dive into the agency side just for a minute and just talk about, you know, what you learned there. Is that something that you would recommend to other people as a career path? We'd love to hear about that a little bit.
I loved working at the agency, on the agency side. I spent many years at Weber Shandwick, which is a global communications firm. what is so special about Weber Shandwick in particular are the people. One person, when I look back at my career, who had such a big impact was Gail Hyman, who's the global president and CEO of Weber Shandwick. Honestly, I loved the people so much, and I loved her so much. And not just her as an individual, she's a brilliant strategic storyteller. Looking back, kind of back to what you're saying about the decades, but looking back in your career and the people who have impacted your career, not just from a management standpoint, but truly as a teacher, I learned from her by her instruction, but then also just by watching and being involved in client work or new business pitches, watching how she thinks and how she thinks strategically about how you can understand a brand's business or a brand's objective to move the business forward, whatever that objective may be. Mm-hmm. But then where does storytelling, where do communications, where does marketing play into that? Where does the big idea play into that? So that it's not separate. You have to learn that. People throw around the word strategy. Oh, we have brand strategy. But do you really understand what that means? And how does it impact driving the business forward? And then how does it ultimately drive what your marketing communication strategy is going to be? And I think had I not truly learned that, because we would learn it, whether it was working with Unilever as a client, I worked with Unilever, Chobani, Amazon, Sonos, and you would sit on these interagency teams. And so I was working alongside major ad agencies, digital agencies, shopper marketing, et cetera, and seeing how it all comes together, but then also doing new business pitches, pitching, whether it was Best Buy, Yahoo, Walmart. When you go in to pitch a new business, you can't just flash up an idea because the brand mm-hmm. team is going to see right through that. So going yeah. through the process and working, having the privilege to work alongside the leaders of the agency and seeing how they think of like, okay, this is Best Buy, this is Walmart. We are going to come up with this concept to pitch the business, and then seeing how it works, why it works. It was invaluable. And truly, I can remember being in the Best Buy pitch and like, not just in the room, but, you know, in the development of the plan, working side by side with her. And that's how I learned to think about truly looking at, okay, this is the business objective. This is the problem at hand. Strategically, this is how we have to approach it. And then from there, that's where the plan falls. And if you don't think about that roadmap of an objective, strategy, and tactic, you could do anything. And especially today, when there's so many potential tactics, do an Instagram, do programmatic. it becomes a tactic soup. You know, and it doesn't actually do anything to move the brand forward. So that's what I find is invaluable. And I think the other thing that's interesting, because I didn't grow up in a sort of brand marketing, formal marketing background. I don't have an MBA. But I think today's marketing is so fundamentally different than what yesterday's marketing used to be, that you have to understand the power of a brand message, the power of storytelling, to then usher that big idea through and to sort of cut through the noise. And like, how does that big idea land and resonate across all these different touch points that the consumer, community, individual, human, whomever, that they have, like whatever's taking their attention? And if you don't have them all threaded together, like a strong story, like what we would do at Weber Shandwick, it doesn't break through. And then it just becomes a bunch of, you're just doing a bunch of stuff. And I think brands very easily fall into the trap of doing a bunch of stuff because there's a lot of stuff to do. And now I'm not saying don't try it, like definitely try the new things. But when you try it, make sure your brand comes through and resonates. Make sure your big idea, whatever that idea may be, like how does it manifest on this platform or this idea or this thing? And that's the secret to really strong marketing programs. And I'd like to say, because of my communications background, that's where one of my strengths lie versus maybe a more traditional marketer.
One of the things that we talked about a lot, right, at the genesis of Tribe was that what's occurred is the cost to publish content mm-hmm. has dropped dramatically. So 20 years ago, publishing Glamour magazine, very expensive, costly, design, print, sell, whatever. And now you can, almost anybody can be a publisher, right? You've got access mm-hmm. to the internet and a phone. You can compete directly with Glamour magazine if you want to. And so what that's resulted in is just a significant increase in the number of publishers, be it individuals, brands, retailers, whatever. And so communications as a function, or PR as a function, has taken on a significantly increased importance right. over the last 10 or so years in particular. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that background you have there seems super, super valuable for today's market. I mean, like, just worked out super well.
And back to what we were saying, like, it's something that I love. And I went back and forth from brand to agency because I love being at an agency so much. I love storytelling. I love working with all the different brands, that it was hard for me to ultimately decide, do I want to be an agency lifer or a brand lifer? as much as I could just come up with ideas and concepts all day long, I really love watching them come to fruition. And so I think I had my first real experience doing that when I was the head of integrated marketing at Bliss in New York. But I think I'm a brand person now because it's so rewarding to come up with these concepts or things or partnerships or have someone's vision and bring it to life. I've been fortunate to work with so many amazing founders and partner with them to say, okay, you have a brilliant idea. How can we bring this to life so that it really moves the needle?
Yeah. Talk to me about that experience with Hourglass. I know you're a big fan of the founder there and obviously you kind of had tremendous success. What was that like when you came in? Where was the brand? And then what did you do to accelerate it? What were the big changes?
It was definitely a team. Krista James, who is the founder, is a brilliant product developer, brilliant creative, impeccable taste. She's a smart individual, great marketer. And I think the marketing team, perhaps maybe she's had in the past. I don't know because I didn't know that.
Yeah.
When she hired me and then she hired other sort of senior level individuals to help bring her ideas to life and push it to the forefront. So I think I was one of the, you know, to help really guide the total marketing team to bring the brand to life. And at the time that was really, so one of the first things I did with the Hourglass team was the launch of the Vanish Foundation Stick, Virtual Skin Perfection, Vanish Seamless Finish Foundation Stick. And that was 2015 or 16. And that was like at the height of the new wave of influencer marketing. I remember one of my colleagues kept saying, all these other brands are doing influencer events. Okay. So let's do one. You know, like she sort of was complaining, like, why can't we? And I said, who said we couldn't? Let's do it. Let's try. If there's potential, you got to do it. You got to try.
Yeah.
You got to see it. Instead of what's worth, like, why would, don't complain, do. Like, let's make a difference.
A lot of people are frozen by indecision, right? They're so afraid of making a mistake.
Analysis paralysis is the worst. Get it done. Just try it. You have to have a little bit of fearlessness. But if you're grounded in your strategy, back to what we were saying, if you're grounded in your idea, you understand your brand values, you understand your strategy, you know what you're trying to achieve, then doing things that maybe seem different don't feel as risky if you know if you're coming from the right place. So we did one of the first, I think their first sort of formal influencer event, and we just did it at the store off of Abbot Kinney. And it was great. So that was one of the things that I did and we watched. And again, back to like creators are so incredible in that their passion for beauty and their ability to educate and demonstrate. Because at the time, the Vanish Foundation Stick was a new formula, weightless, perfect skin, like it would give you sort of this virtual skin perfection, unlike anything in the market. We were concerned that someone might say, oh, a foundation stick, that's like a dated product because of foundation sticks in the past. So what was wonderful about then being able to work with creators at the time was that they demonstrated it and they were able to amplify that story and really demonstrate the proof. So it was fun. So that was one thing that I worked on.
Yeah, that's fun. I think coming into an existing brand and starting a new brand are very different things.
Yes.
So with that being said, I would imagine when you first started, there was some semblance of an idea in terms of what Rare Beauty would become. What were the differences in terms of challenges with starting a new brand from scratch versus working with a brand that's had a long history already?
Yeah. A lot. And that's one of the reasons why I joined the Rare team was because you don't get that opportunity to, so often to start something from the very beginning. And because I love storytelling so much, because I saw the potential of understanding Selena's personal values and a loose understanding of what she wanted to do before I sort of heard from her firsthand, it was pretty exciting. But the difference, you know, it's same, but different. Same in that there was a founder's vision that you need to help bring to life as best as possible. But with Rare Beauty, because nothing had been done, it was truly like the first time I met Selena and sat down with her, such a wonderful human, disarmingly kind and purposeful and really wanting to make a difference. And when she spoke, we were going back and forth and I was like, Selena, why do you want to do this? And she said, I want to create a lane in the beauty industry where men and women feel welcome. And I hadn't heard anything like that before. And that's so true to her. Community is so core to her and central to her as a person. And she has such honest and authentic conversations with her community. As much as we all throw, every brand throws around the word authenticity, authentic. But it was so much so that it's almost become trite. But in these instances, there's no better word to describe it because she truly is just that. And when she said the word welcome, I thought, that doesn't feel like anything else. That really feels different. So we built Rare Beauty. And as we continued to talk about it, and she herself has been so personally open and honest about her mental health journey and how she said she wanted to create the space where people feel welcome and feel supported, and that how can a brand do that and then make you feel good? And feel good, whether it's the type of content that we're putting out that makes you feel welcome, like images that make you feel like you belong, or words that are subtle reminders of positivity, or things like everything that we do with Rare Impact, which Rare Impact is the part of the company that is dedicated to making a difference in the world. And is that sharing conversations around mental health, educating around mental health, educating around trusted resources, and starting conversations around positive self-worth. And I think what is true and authentic to Selena, to Rare Beauty, that is who she is. That is what she, you talk to her for an afternoon, that is what you experience. And so she really wanted to make sure her ethos was echoed throughout the brand. And she's been a wonderful person to work with to do just that.
Which is not necessarily the perception of like a lot of celebrities, right? So I think the likelihood of not being as friendly once you cross 100 million fans increases, right? Like,
she's the coolest.
It's pretty cool she's maintained that. And then I would imagine from a mental health perspective, that idea of like feeling good, right? Making people feel welcome. In particular, if you look at any of the data over the last year or so and the way that the pandemic has affected mental health, it was already a big issue before you guys got into this. And then it's gotten so much worse.
So we started working on the mission of the brand and crystallizing what it is. And we knew it wanted to do something within mental health. And we started that in fall of 2019. Mm-hmm. And mental health is multifaceted. And when we said, okay, what can we really do to make an impact as a brand? When we looked at the concept of loneliness and how it often is the beginning of many other things, and that back to what Selena said about wanting people to feel welcome and then knowing how we can create community, not just brand to community member, but community member to community member. And I can talk to you a little bit about how we did that. But that felt to us like a real space that felt authentic to the brand, like that a brand could really do that to create that connectivity. So that's where it came from. And then lo and behold, we're in the worldwide pandemic and loneliness is more apparent than ever. One of the things that we set out to do, so we announced the brand in January of 2020. We announced that the brand was coming, but because we, with the intent, Selena wanted to sort of pull the curtain back and bring people along as we built the brand, because she said, listen, I'm doing this not for my community, but with the community. And that's, yeah, you're right. You are. So that's why you want them to feel welcome.
Not
everybody
does it that way, though. That's obviously, I mean, that's really similar to the way that Mariana Hewitt talked about Summer Fridays.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, I'm like doing this like almost on behalf of the community, right?
Yeah.
Like we're doing this together.
When we think about the mental health work that we do, so much of it is for them. Like it's educating, it's understanding the resources that are out there for them. It's not to help someone else. It's truly to give back to them. One of the things to sort of create community and connection, we said, oh, let's do a community call and let's do a campaign. As the chief marketing officer, I'm like, how great would it be to have our community in one of our first launch campaigns? Mm-hmm. But even more so, kind of walk the walk of what we're talking and get them to meet one another. What if we could actually get our community to meet in person? And yes, of course, get these great images, but then also really even more so, create new friendships. Like, how often do you really meet new friends? So we did this thing called a community call, but we said, we want to hear your story. We want to hear why you're Rare. We want to see what you look like. It's really about your story because we want to celebrate your story. We did a call to action, send in your story, whatever. We had 150,000 in within 3 days, 50,000 people visit our site, 21,000 people actually send in their story. And I thought, are we going to get real story? Like, is this going to be, what are we going to get? You never know. You never
know.
Yeah,
of course.
But we got amazing, wonderful, open, honest stories of people sharing why they were Rare. And this was January, February, something. And so we started reading through them. Then COVID hit. So we had to postpone the whole shoot, event, concept, bringing them together, which was the pits, obviously. And I would like to bring it back, but I don't know when. Still resume what we were trying. But in the meantime, we thought, we have no playbook. What are we supposed to do in pandemic? So we postponed the shoot and flying people to Los Angeles. But what we did do was then leverage these 21,000 people and just started picking people at random and started talking to them on Zoom. And every week, almost every week since March of last year, so for about a year, we have been having these things, we call them Rare chats. And there's about 8 or 10 people per chat. and we've gotten to know our community. And it's invigorating for the team. It's fun to just have open and honest conversations with your community to hear things like, what are you watching on Netflix? To like, how are you feeling? To not just like, what do you want to see from Rare Beauty? We could, sometimes we talk about that, but it's really truly a two-way conversation. And what I love is that they have become friends with one another because I see it on Instagram. I see them talk to each other and now we know who they are. So when I see my Texas Queen comment on Instagram, I know that that's Victoria. You know, or when I see Tuscany Amos, like I know who that, I know Jaina Ann, like I actually know
who these people are, like yes. The comments, like who is this yes. commenter? So that's yes. just some handle.
I've met them, we've talked to them, or they know the team, or they know Katie or Grace or Ashley or Amani. That has been cool.
Well, I'm such a broken record on this topic, but like that's the magic of the internet, right? Is, you know, I can be sitting here in California and have conversations with my customers all around the world, one-to-one, in a way that's meaningful, at scale, right? Like you can just do that, and you never were able to do that before.
No.
And that's just such a powerful tool that's totally underutilized.
So we've really been able to foster community, and Selena's joined a few of the calls, and it's just been awesome.
I can imagine people freak out when Selena's on there. That probably goes over pretty well.
Oh my God, they do. But she is, you know, like it makes my eyes well, because they say to her, you see me, like you hear me. And it's true. It's like she has this superpower of seeing people's inner beauty. And I've watched it in person. It's pretty magical.
No, that's super cool.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the effects of all that good feelings, right? Like the brand has been growing rapidly, I have to imagine. What have been some of the challenges with that growth, right? So I would imagine, again, going back to your past, you're typically going into an existing brand, right? Yes. You tick up the growth rate from 10 to 30% or whatever, right? But this is like from $0 to $20 million in revenue, right? Or whatever the number is. And so what's that been like? How has that experience been?
Well, and let's do it in a pandemic.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's do it from your kitchen table. How about that? Oh, man.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about that one. And then let's have your whole launch plan go right out the window. The like
everything
monkey planning.
You traditionally, right. So it's, whatever you traditionally know works, like do a big launch event. You're not going to do it. You can't.
Well, and like again, shoot. You guys have had either the most successful or second most successful launch we've ever tracked behind Fenty. Oh, so there you go. At least from an EMV perspective, right?
Knock
so
on wood.
Yeah.
What's
that been like? What have been some of the challenges?
It's hard. Every challenge. Yeah. And hopefully every challenge we've overcome. I'm so proud and feel such gratitude for the team, my peers, my colleagues, my team, because it was hard and there was no playbook. Where do I even begin? I mean, everything from content. Like you think about what's required of a brand to launch a website, to launch a brand on Sephora, to launch a gondola. First and foremost, it's a lot of content. You know, you need a hero image. You need all, and then it was 150 SKUs. And so it's not just like launching, once you've launched a brand, it's usually like quarterly launches. And maybe with each of those quarterly launches, there's a handful of products. But this was like, we're going to launch everything and a brand. You're not going to have any of the traditional tools that you have to do it.
So you literally can't do photo shoots. So enjoy that.
No. So thankfully, we did have one massive photo shoot in January before the world went into quarantine. And with that, we were able to get a ton, thankfully, and just really sort of sweat those assets. But then the world went into quarantine. I think I had about 5 shoots scheduled from March to May of stuff that Sephora needed.
Yeah.
And I mean, my goodness, they laughed to this day because they were like, Katie, what are we going to do? And I'm like, I'm going to get back to you on that, but we're going to figure it out.
We're going to figure it out.
I'm going to figure it out because we can figure it all out. I just don't have the answer right now.
On this particular call?
There were a lot of calls like that. And so on this public forum, I will say thank you to the Sephora team for trusting me.
They had a lot to figure
because
out too.
We couldn't
I'm sure.
get, like, I could not have Selena or models, like, or photographer. Like, you just couldn't do it. It wasn't possible. Yeah. So, Selena did a lot of tutorial videos, a lot of beauty advisor training, everything from her bedroom. You could see we have some really great YouTubes. These were assets that we used in digital marketing, on our Sephora P page, on our website.
You might have gotten more of her time this way than you would have otherwise. It might have worked out well from that perspective because she's stuck in her house. What else is she going
to
do?
What was cool was how part of the sort of ethos behind the brand is makeup made to feel good in without hiding what makes you unique. The products are all are lightweight and easy to use. And when you see Selena doing it, like there were no professional photographers, no professional lighting, no makeup artists. Like that's as real as it gets. And then the other thing that was tough is that when you launch a foundation and concealer, 48 shades of foundation and concealer, it's best practice. It's recommended that you have 48 individuals wearing the product so that when you are on the e-commerce site, you can help find your shade because it's so tough to find your foundation shade on a website, on .com. So how can we eliminate the barriers as best as possible? So I got so many questions. When are you going to, how are you going to, and I was like, how do I get 48 people? I like to call it the Herculean effort. We found 48 individuals back and forth, casted, and we sent them all a primer, a foundation, a concealer, and a ring light. And each of the people had to have an iPhone X or whatever the latest iPhone was, simply because the quality, because they were doing it themselves, and just to have the consistency of quality. We give a little bit of art direction, like stand against a white wall and smile. But then it worked out. So we have 48 images of people wearing our foundations and primer and concealer. And that was truly it. No makeup artist, no professional lighting, no professional photographers. And that I kind of loved as well, because it really showed the authenticity of the product and how easy it was to use. And so we've maintained some of the virtual. And I think what the pandemic did is that it forced us to reimagine how we create content for our brand and how we execute so much of our creative. And we're still not fully back. So we launched more products. We had to do more of these virtual shoots. So we kind of got the virtual shoot thing down. But it's hard. It's, you know, you're building everything. You're kind of building the plane while it's in the air. So you're building processes. Everyone's wearing a different hat. Roles and responsibilities are mixed and blurred. And all you can do is just hold hands and be kind to one another and go for it. But at the end of the day, I think the most important thing was to ground everyone in your brand values and mission and vision, because you're all moving so quickly that if you're not grounded in that, you could run the risk of sort of diluting the brand or doing sort of the quote unquote wrong thing.
Yeah, I feel like focus is so critical if you actually like believe in your values, right? Because it kind of centers you and grounds you. I want to do one more question about marketing, and we're going to talk about influencers for a second. So for you, you know, obviously you've been doing this for a long time and you've been very successful at it, right? Just from a numerical perspective, the brands that you've been with have done really well. So what has been your approach? If you were to distill it down into two or three core philosophies, what would those be? How do you think about it?
First and foremost, I admire and I'm so appreciative. I am an admirer of creators because I love people who are passionate about beauty, first and foremost. You love makeup, I love you. Like, I really, truly, that's what I think is so, because it is like this passion point is a group of enthusiasts. And I have that shared enthusiasm and that shared passion and appreciation for beauty. And I love watching, whether it's the artistry, the opinions, the education, the demonstration, the approach. I just am an admirer, first and foremost. Honestly, I think that is important. And I think that's a point of differentiation because I don't view creators as media planning for people. It could be, I think, once you understand it. But first and foremost, I love them. Like, I'm a fan. I watch YouTube videos. And I think what's unique about Rare Beauty is that the whole team loves creators. Like, from our CEO to everybody.
Oh, yeah.
A
lot of it's the former NYX team, right? Which was kind of the original influencer brand.
We just like it. And I like people who like beauty, truly. Because I think it's fun to see how it all comes to life. So from there, I think it's an appreciation. And then it's relationship building. And how do you build the relationships with individuals who can help tell your brand story? And then third, so it's appreciation, relationship, then it's finding like-minded values and finding ones, individuals who make sense to talk about your brand. Whether do they start out as fans of the brand and they discover it and they like a product or a brand value or a mission or something, initiative, or you find them and you say, you know what, this person might actually be interested in this. Maybe I can build that relationship and talk to them about it. And that could be anything. That could be for a product. That could be for an initiative. We have an incredible liquid liner, Perfect Strokes liquid liner. Maybe there's a creator who is known for his or her cat eye, you know? And so from that, I would want to make sure that that person because they're so great at the cat eye, do they know our perfect strokes liner? Or on the flip side, it could be someone who is open and honest about mental health. And maybe they came to us because they said, you know what, I really appreciate what you're doing with the Rare Beauty Mental Health Council and your partnership with NAMI. So I think that's where it's appreciating and paying attention and building that relationship.
I mean, it's just dead in line with what we've seen work consistently over time. So not surprising to hear it from you, but it's always great. There's a reason you guys have done well. Okay, yes. Let's do a couple fun end of show questions. So after people are done working with you, what would you hope they would say about you?
I would hope they would say that she's smart and that she's a good storyteller. What I think I'm good at is seeing the potential in something or someone and bringing it to life. How do you tell that story? How do you thread that needle? How do you make it come to life so that it makes an impact?
I like that.
And like upbeat, positive energy, all that stuff too.
Of course. The thing I really liked that you said in there is that like getting to know yourself. One of the things that I've really come to realize is like, you don't need to like fight your way upstream on things. When you find something that you're really good at and that you enjoy, dive into that. Don't resist it. You certainly want to round yourself off and, you know, be able to be good at things that are important, but you also shouldn't resist specialization. I'm a huge fan of it.
I agree. And it takes time to figure it out. And another thing that I talked to the mentees about and that I think is really important is to not just go through the motions. Even in frustrating situations, you can learn something and understand whether it's the way you react to something, the way you react to someone else. Why are you doing this? Why is the company doing this? Like, what can you learn? What can you gain? And all of that just contributes to understanding who you are and your self-awareness as a person so that when you do get to a certain role where you know you need to hire a team around you or execute something superbly, you know where your strengths are. Because I think I used to be a person who needed to control everything, thought that they had to have the idea, you could do it. That's not human. You can't. And if you try to do that, you will fail or you will damage yourself. Like it's too hard on the individual. If you are that magic human who can do everything, instead, why can't you figure out where you know your strengths lie and then find those who complement you, whether they're your peers, your bosses, or your team, to then really make the effort as strong as possible. But it takes time to figure that out. But you really have to be present in yourself to understand why you're doing some things and how you're reacting. And then I think also like it helps to have that empathy to understand where others are coming from too. So like, okay, that's their strength. That's why they're reacting this way. It helps you become a better team player, I think.
Of course. I think one of the other things that I've learned is that, you know, you can't do everything, right? And like the analogy I always really liked was from this woman, basically ran like a university. And this was particularly targeted towards women, but she's like, when you grow up, you're told that you need to be a great mom and you need to be a partner at the law firm and you need to be at all the PTA meetings and you need to be like all of these different things. And she's like, the reality is you can't be all of those things, right? Like you can't like have dinner with your kids every night and be a partner at the law firm. Like those things don't happen simultaneously. Yeah. And she's like, so what you need to do is be comfortable, make the decision, right? Think about the things that you want, think about the things that are important to you, and then make a decision and then be fully comfortable with that decision. I can't remember if it was in that article or another, but they likened it to a stove, right? So you've got four different burners. So you've got friends, family, work, and health. And they're like, if you really want to be good at something, you can only pick two. You know, you can stretch it to three. You're not going to totally give up on one of them, but like pick your two or three and like really focus on it. Yeah. I know for me, especially after we had kids, like it was like, okay, for me right now, it's family and it's work, right? And then a little bit of health, but I'm choosing to not emphasize time with my friends. And like I have to be comfortable with that because I'm not going to be able to do that, right? Thinking about it in that way makes you not as upset. You're like, well, why am I not spending as much time with my friends? It's like, well, I've made the choice to focus here. And so I'm a big fan of that.
I totally agree. And well, because there's a few things. A bunch of my team, they say like, I want more work-life, not team, but like the mentees. Yep. They said, what about work-life balance? How do you do work-life balance? And I think it's about work-life harmony. I once heard Jeff Bezos speak, and that was the way he answered the question, was that it's about work-life harmony. Now, there was a lot of validity and truth to that. I think some days work is going to be a little bit more than the life and vice versa. But to your stove analogy, I remember Robin Burns once. So I worked at Victoria's Secret Beauty and Robin was running Victoria's Secret at the time. And I remember she said, there's always something that has to give a little. So it's your same thing about the stove. And that has stayed with me. Like sometimes it's personal, sometimes it's work. And I think you're right. It's how are you cognizant and then confident in what you choose to sort of give into. And in my 30s, I think I just went through the motions. I don't think I realized that in my 30s. I'm serious. Yeah. Just do. But maybe people in their 30s now are a little bit more introspective.
So last question, I was reading an article about you. It talked about how much you believe in like getting good sleep, waking up early, prepping your day. What is your morning routine? What does it look like? We already know what the 8 to 8:30 time slot looks like. I think that's the mentoring period, right?
Yeah.
What's your morning routine?
Well, it was much better before TikTok. I tell you what, I'm really trying to not go straight to my phone. I wake up. My friend Christina Zilber, from the founder of Jouer Cosmetics, she introduced me to the 5-minute journal. I've been doing that. And it's so easy.
What is it? I don't know what it is.
It's basically like you have to say like what you're grateful for, things that will make the day great. And then at the end of the day, it's one page per day. And the end of the day is a recap of sort of what went well about the day and what you're grateful for sort of thing.
No, so it's
it's a gratitude journal practice, but it makes it simple. Like sometimes journaling, like if you just look at a blank journal, that's quite daunting and you're like, well, I'm going to just go to bed. But if it's a very simple form to fill out every day, that's easier to do. And it does sort of make you realize like, oh, that happened and that was great. So I start with a 5-minute journal and take the dog on a walk, make coffee, do some sort of exercise, 30 minutes of something, and then try and read some of those newsletters. I do think it's important. The world is changing so fast, the marketing world, that I try to keep my finger on the pulse of as much as possible as soon as it launches. I'm really into live streaming platforms. I'm really into newness right now.
I don't know if it's productive at all, but I really got into streaming, but more specifically game streaming, because I'm like trying to learn about it, because we're probably going to go into gaming eventually. And I was like, okay, you know, kind of looked at different games and like I got some advice from somebody internally that watches Twitch. So I found a game that I used to play. And then now it's like I watch it literally every day, like while I'm working. It's just like what I have on in the background. I'm like, this is so weird. I did not imagine myself watching video games, and now I do it. So that's cool.
It's interesting. I like watching people put on makeup.
Yeah, absolutely. Same kind of thing, right? I think there's a lot of people that wouldn't have imagined that would be something they enjoy. And now you just have it on the background while you're doing your work. And Well, I really appreciate you taking out the time, Katie. And
I had a lot
of fun today. This was awesome.
Likewise.
Congratulations on all your success.
Thanks.
I love your mentoring. Hopefully your TikTok career doesn't take off too much and Mehdi and the team lose you. But
I don't think there's anything to worry about.
No, you never know. I don't know. Just one viral video away. But no, I appreciate it so much. This was awesome. This was a blast.
Thank you. Thank you, Connor. This is great.
All right. Thanks, Katie.
Bye.
Be a friend, tell a friend, and subscribe. Earned by Creator IQ. Creator IQ is your all-in-one solution to grow, manage, scale, and measure your influencer marketing program. Ready to unlock the power of the creator economy? Get started with a demo today at creatoriq.com.